关系。很错的这里他们是在不是能是在不是这个不是这个不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不是不Can we agree, what is that we start the discussion? An apology for members who are not here, an apology. According to the policy, the department is there, members are here, whatever it is. Department wants to be again, and we have to watch this as a policy.
Sorry, say on a point of order.
What is the point of order?
Say that meeting was supposed to run from 1 o'clock until 3 o'clock on Wednesday. The ANC called a caucus, and that's why the meeting was cut short. We cut it short at 1:45 before we had a chance to finish questioning the department.
No.
So if you want to put the blame, start with the ANC.
It is acknowledged that the department is here present because we put in our meeting. And if the department is here, those who want to post questions are allowed to post questions. And the department wants to exhort the question. Department may decide to be here until the end of the presentation. They may also decide to move and do that items. I'm really aware that this is a very small thing. We are appealing to again our administration not to see that this small thing. In the impact below, the task force will go a second decision, but not for a focus of parliament. The media has been complaining about this day, even for the rules subcommittee. They hadn't come here. And they were really worried about it. But we hope that the committee secretary always will be on top of the venue. That does not feel like this. The team committee is too directory. It is very difficult in a smaller venue. We squeeze only in a manner that is perfectly unacceptable. Director General, I'm not sure how long you have given us that time until we end all the questions at the year. Or we want to go back to this one.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. We have decided to make ourselves available to interact with the committee this morning, primarily for purposes of responding to the questions that we have already received. But if there should be other questions that honorable members might have, which don't necessarily flow from the questions that were sent to us in writing, we would also be happy to entertain. But we would also appreciate it, Secretary, that once we are done responding to the questions, if there could be excused. Cape Town has become a very active area. Flights in and out of this place have become very technology set. So we have already booked flights that leave by daily. So we would appreciate it at least once we are done with the questions. Apologies.
Apologies for Mr. Mujahi. No, Professor Kulisa, he is giving another meeting.
Okay, but if they don't proceed with their question, the members responded to our request that they must be written question, given to a department, in order for them to have enough time to prepare for detailed answers. So that's important. I said the question are not meant to cheat. It's meant to receive information, therefore giving them time to do so is a relevant mistake. This is careful.
Thank you very much, sir. We will deal with the questions that we have received. In a sense, part of the reason why we thought it important for the questions to be made available to us in advance is not only for purposes of us preparing them, but more to enable us to cut down on our delegation. Because we could have brought all the senior people here, and some of them might walk back without any questions being posed in their area of focus. So that was part of the consideration. We have received 15 questions, Chairperson. If you will allow me, sir, I will read the question for the benefit of the members, and then we will then deal with the question. First question was, all these questions, perhaps I shouldn't say where it came from, but let's deal with the substance of it. Noting that 360 billion is added to the market eradication program grant in 2016-2017, what bucket toilets are referred to? Toilets that existed pre-1994, all bucket toilets, or only bucket toilets identified post-1994? Our response to this question, Chairperson, is that in wisdom, the President established a Department of Water and Sanitation, whose mandate it is to deal with the market eradication program. It is not within our knowledge or expertise to respond to this question. We recommend that this question be referred directly to the Department of Water and Sanitation, because there are measures to respond to this question in detail. What I can say, though, is that in the previous financial year, as part of the current financial year, the Department of Water and Sanitation and its predecessor, the Department of Human Settlements, which at the time was still responsible for the sanitation program. Our municipal infrastructure agent, MISA, was one of the implementing agents of that program in the Northern Cape. So, but that doesn't give us the owners of the program and to be able to justify the policy imperatives and the planning in relation to that. The second question reads as follows. The increase in the municipal demarcation transition grant is welcome, but as previously indicated, this is nowhere near enough, as the amalgamation of Swanee and Nizodin cost in excess of 1.2 billion. Allow me to also just edit some of the questions as I read them. How does the ministry and the department anticipate dysfunctional municipalities will be able to afford these poorly considered amalgamations? Dr. Naidu will deal with the quantum of the municipal and demarcation transition funds. As to the main judgment, whether or not amalgamations are poorly considered, we'll probably would choose not to to delve much into that question, but rather simply say that the amalgamations that have come about as a result of the Section 22 requests by Minister Gordon at the time were predicated primarily on the need to reduce the number of municipalities that are financially non-viable. To suggest that the amalgamations are poorly considered certainly have beyond me as an official to deal with that with the liquid arena. I wish I was able to do so, but I'm afraid I'm not. But with regards to the quantum of the municipal demarcation transition project, I'm going to ask Dr. Naidu to respond to that question right away.
Thank you very much. True, the when one has regard to the Chuanga and Metrini merger of more than a billion rands, we've identified from a FFC report that the 1 billion rand plus was informed by in main payment made by the city on behalf of the municipality that were amalgamated together with Chuanga. A running operational cost shortfall of 158 million rand. This figure was 124.2 million rand. And capital expenditure cost relating to 373 million point 600,000. So, in essence, the total Tswana Metswedding merger, according to the FFG report, was 1 billion and 35 million rand. Now, with regards to the 408 million rand that should be made available in the 16-17 and 17-18 financial years, in the first financial year, it would be 297 million and then 111 million rand. Now, I must say that the figures that we arrived at deal specifically with restructuring costs, and which restructuring costs I will itemize just now. But the committee that sat and came up with these figures were officials from National Treasury, officials from the Department of Corporate Governance, SALGA, officials from KZN COPSA, as well as the FSC. Now, why KZN COPSA? KZN COPSA because you would know that the Demarcation Board had finalized the redeterminations of those affected municipalities in 2013. So KZN has had, let's say, a head start in terms of the process. So the cost that they had come up with remained was used to inform the submission that was made by this committee to the Treasury, and which cost, as I indicated earlier, would be restricted just for consolidation of records management between affected municipalities, the development of organograms, the development or rationalization of bylaws, communication and public participation, alignment of GIS data sets, valuation roles, tariff restructuring, debt reconciliation, and you would find all of this listed in the framework as put out in the Division of Revenue Act. So you will also know that in respect of the grants that would now be going through these affected municipalities, in some instances there could be a reduction in the local government's equitable share, for example, because you would know that any municipality gets a base allocation of 5 million rands. So if there are three municipalities that are coming together, the 15 million rands would now be reduced to 5, so it means a reduction of 2 million rands. But the National Treasury has guaranteed that in respect of the local government equitable share, for example, 95% of the allocated equitable share would be guaranteed to that affected redetermined municipal boundary. So that's just my first one on the question posed by the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, if I may proceed, third question, which is as follows. The increase in the equitable share does not keep pace with inflation, and certainly is a far cry from the increase recently awarded to ESCOM by NERSA. This is going to place further pressure on municipalities, many of which are already unable to pay their debts to the electricity supplier. What steps is the minister taking to address this issue? Mr. Zigidi, who is on my left, will close the session.
Thank you, DG, honourable members, Chair. The issue of the equitable share is not necessarily supposed to keep pace with inflation, specifically because equitable share is not meant to replace the revenue-raising capacities of municipalities or become a revenue-raising instrument available to a municipality. But with regard to the current equitable share, it has been reviewed by Treasury, SALGA, COPSA, and State South Africa in 2012. And as honorable members will be aware, that the formula is driven by the population growth. The formula that was adopted in 2012 is redistributive in nature, and it then provided and caters for those municipalities that might be poor through a window called the revenue adjustments. And the factors that were looked at when the review was made were factors like the unemployment rate in a municipality, the number of poor households as a percentage of the total household in that municipality, and the total income of households that are residing in that municipality, and those households that are also residing in traditional land. Now, what normally happens is that the formula is reviewed on an annual basis to look at those factors that I have mentioned. And those reviews are not really major reviews, because the major reviews only happen after the statistics have done its census. So likewise, the formula also caters for what we normally call the correction part, which ensures that for those municipalities which might have been affected by either the reduction in population, they are guaranteed some form of funding to smooth out the changes in the allocation. Thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. If we may now proceed to question number 4, which is as follows. Note that the municipal infrastructure grant is decreased by 965 million, while the purpose of the municipal infrastructure grant has now been changed to include the refurbishing and upgrading of municipal infrastructure. In other words, the funding available for the original purpose of the MIG, namely installing new infrastructure to ensure that all South Africans benefit from service delivery, is greatly reduced. How does the department reconcile the seemingly impossible conflict of municipal responsibilities? Jefferson, I will allow Mr. Fossey to field this question.
Thanks, TJ, and another member. Chairperson, I think it's well known that the Minister of Finance, in his budget speech, announced the fiscal consolidation measures, which in our context included the budget cuts and then COCA. We have been affected by these budget cuts in terms of our personnel budget, the grants that we administer as a department. And the implications for municipalities in the context of the question that is asked by the honourable member is that municipalities now, we will need to prioritize the project that they are funding through the MIG. We have been working with the provinces to assist municipalities in terms of identifying this needed sort of project. But also it should be noted that the MIG is not the only grant that municipalities are receiving. They are actually also expected to raise their own revenue to fund some of the refurbishment and the operation and maintenance factors. So in that context, we will look at all the grants that the municipalities are receiving, but also look at their own grants to support clearly what it means now. Municipalities must begin to prioritize because the issue of fiscal consolidation is affecting all of us. It means we all have to work within the kind of challenges that are facing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may proceed, but perhaps before I do that, I think it probably would benefit the committee to appreciate the fact that yes, while the primary purpose of MIG is to roll out new infrastructure in order to extend assets, that very objective could easily be undermined by the fact that old infrastructure continues to break down. And because of that, it effectively then undermines the very objective of infrastructure development if there is poor maintenance of such infrastructure. What has been agreed upon with the Treasury for the first time is that a percentage of it can then be used to refurbish infrastructure, which wasn't the case in the past. And it is not contemplated that municipalities will then spend the entirety of it on refurbishments. primary objective is still to roll out new infrastructure, but that the percentage that can in fact be utilized for purposes of refurbishing existing infrastructure to make sure that service delivery is not undermined at all, except some of the detailed infrastructure in various parts of our municipalities. So, President, I would like to proceed to question number five, which is as follows. The municipal disaster recovery grant is reduced from 188.9 million to 140 million. Yet, it is extremely difficult for municipalities to access these funds at extremely short notice in the instance of a local disaster, such as a fire or flood. What has been done to facilitate access to these funds? Why have they been reduced? I will not pass too much judgment, as I said from the beginning, but you can sense that the questions are very argumentative. But we'll try and provide very calm responses, very valid responses. The response to this question is that municipal disaster recovery is actually not meant to be utilized for the purpose that the question suggests, accessing it on short notices for purposes of dealing with disasters. Disaster recovery grant is meant for post-disaster rehabilitation and reconstruction. In order to deal with emergencies and things like that, there are other grants that are available. Among these, we have what is called the Municipal Disaster Grant, which is available to provide immediate relief to communities, and this is also provided for in 2016-2017. This grant is actually used primarily to provide immediate relief in case of drought, fire. So the specific question regarding the municipal disaster recovery, it's not meant to provide immediate relief. So if the question basically said, why can't those funds be accessed immediately? The answer is precisely because they're not designed to. They're meant to be spent after damage has been occasioned by a disaster and assessment has been done. You now know exactly how much you need to rehabilitate. So for an example, the projection here was originally 188.9. After the assessment, we've now established that what you need is 140. That is what's been allocated. So that money is not meant for the different people other than rehabilitation, opposed to disaster. I'm just improvising on the response that's been given, but should extra information be required, it is certainly available. If I may proceed to question number six, Chairperson, what is the reason for the significant decrease in the local government support and intervention program? Surely, given the huge number of programs at local government level and the massive number of state government spots, this should be a priority program. So I'm going to ask Mr. Fossey to fill this question ahead of the local government support and intervention section in the fund.
Chair, this question is from the Honourable Member. It's not clear whether it relates to the programs, the significant decreases. It is in relation to the programs of the branch or the budget of the branch. But on the matters of the budget, it would then relate, the decrease would relate to the cost containment that I referred to earlier. But just to say that this branch, the local government support intervention branch, was only established in August of 2015 with the realignment of the organizational structure. It currently includes a team of five chief directors, five directors that are dedicated to supporting the municipality. So the additional capacity.
There will be no harm at all.
saying the branch local government supporting intervention management was only established in August 2016 with the sole purpose of ensuring that we create the station capacity for the coordination of the back to basics program. It also includes a new chief directorate that focuses on monitoring performance of municipalities. As I've indicated, the decrease, significant decrease, we're not sure whether it relates to the budget or to the program, but this is a new branch which now is more sort of capacitated. Of course, the issue of adequate of capacity is a different matter, but we do, as you said, dedicated people that are continuously monitoring performance of municipalities. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may proceed. Question number 7 reads as follows. Similarly, it is important that we work on good numbers. What is the reason for the 6,342% increase in the municipal performance monitoring program? What good is monitoring if you are not going to intervene and provide support? I hope that we've completed the question accurately, but that percentage does seem rather large. Mr. Porter is going to leave the back and respond to the question.
Well, I think what we should do, colleagues, if there's a question that is not clear, those members are here. I think the member can elaborate if you wish to make it easy for us to answer.
Can I ask you, sir? Chair, it's sub-program 2 of program 5 of the department. And it relates to municipal performance monitoring, which in 2015-16 had a budget of 5 million rand, and in 2016-17 has a budget of 322 million rand. That is a 6,342% increase in budget. So it may seem large, but that's the percentage increase.
I think the question has been satisfied.
Chair, the chief director is performance monitoring. The 5 million in the 2015-16 budget. This was a structure that existed in the previous organogram, which was only made up of one director. In the current realigned size of the department, we have performance monitoring, which now includes our three directories. And then the two, it's basically two different contexts, where the 5 million was in the previous structure, and one directory. So the increase would, of course, include then the new responsibilities of the new directory. But overall, Chair, we agree that the intervention, the provisioning of support is very important intervention in the municipalities. And overall, the basics program, is geared towards supporting and ensuring that we improve the performance of our
participants. Thank you very much, Mr. But I think perhaps one important addition that one needs to make is the fact that in the past, the way we've been doing monitoring is basically limited to receiving reports. And then compiling an overall report on what is the state of affairs at municipal level. But since the introduction of back to basics, we have a different approach to monitoring. We're now talking about a hands-on approach to monitoring, which also means that you don't monitor purely through receiving reports, but that we actually have people on the ground verifying what we see on the monthly reports that we see from municipalities. The such information is actually accurate. So people actually go out there and check to see whether that is the case. So it's really a case of consolidation of this. But in any event, it is consistent with the mandate of the national departments, such as we are, because we have to provide support to municipalities, and to enable us to do that, we have to monitor how it is that municipalities are working, and we do so working together with provincial partners. But ultimately, we understand that the responsibility lies with us to make sure that municipalities perform optimally, and the Back to Basics program actually indicates that we have a targeted approach to those municipalities that we know are dysfunctional, and also those municipalities that are at risk or that are not doing particularly well, to make sure that those municipalities actually migrate from one category to the next through improving their performance. So Back to Basics has become the way of life, has become the mainstay, and our projects must then reflect that our day-to-day business is to monitor and support municipalities to make sure that they improve. Otherwise, if we simply sit back and wait for municipalities to simply give us support and we just tick the boxes, then we don't think we're going to see any significant change in that regard. Chairperson, question number 8 reads as follows. In the 2015-16 budget process, SALCA was identified as an area where cost-cutting could be achieved, as this entity could become self-sufficient, particularly if it cuts its exorbitant administration costs. We note with concern that an amount of $29.5 million has been budgeted for SALCA in the 2016-2017, and $90 million over the next years. Why the turnaround and a prudent financial decision? Well, we are not really flattered by this question that we did exercise some prudence at some point. But I would like to just point out very clearly that SALCA is in fact the entity that has approached us and the National Treasury to advise that they would no longer need a further allocation. It wasn't a decision on our part that we want to effect the costs cutting by actually stopping funds from flowing to SALCA. At any rate, if we decided that we no longer want to allocate any amount of money to SALCA, the department itself would not receive that money, because that money comes in as a transfer to SALCA. So if we say we no longer want to transfer any money to SALCA, then that money will be retained by the treasurer in that. It's a concern that will no longer flow to SALCA. But we understand that SALCA has in fact had a change of mind with regard to whether or not they can sustain themselves only through the money that they generate from subscriptions of our members. And they thought it's important that they should actually continue to receive the allocation that the Treasury was giving to them, which money flows through our budget as part of our approach. So our understanding at this stage is that SALCA feels the need for that money to continue to flow to them in order to complement whatever it is they receive from member subscriptions. So it's not a decision of the department whether or not to do something that the Treasury has in fact been approached, and they have in fact authorized that money to continue to flow to SALCA. Question number 9 deals with the Community Work Program, and the question reads as follows. Cabinet approved reductions in Program 6, Community Work Program, over the medium term of 586 million. Why has the department gone back on this decision of Cabinet and increased the allocation by 815.3 million? To start with, and the tone is slightly different from the others, but let me start by saying the allocations that are made to the Community Work Program are decided upon by the Treasury based on a request we made to them. We have a target of 1 million participants by 2019. So every year, as we start a new MTR, we then submit a request with a view to making sure that we are enabled through the allocations we get to strike that target of 1 million work opportunities by 2019. A decision was made that this amount was being reduced over the medium term. And the decision to reduce that amount was not a decision of the parties, but was a decision of the Treasury based on the fiscal constraint that the country is faced with. But when it became apparent that, in fact, some money would be found elsewhere for an increased allocation to be allocated to the department, we would have been the last people to turn it away, especially in a climate where unemployment is quite high, as everybody knows. The community work program is part of our public employment programs of government. So that increase simply means that we are able to get more participants into the program as opposed to what we'd be able to do if we only had 586. If the question seems to say that we should perhaps turn down the increase, because it's more than the original allocation, we would say, well, we certainly welcome the increase, because it enables us better to get as many people as possible on the program. So I'm not quite sure what the clerk is in the question. Cabinet would have made a decision, indeed it did make a decision, that's a certain point with regard to what allocation was made to the program. If indeed additional space was found within the business to allocate us additional money, those would have been processed through the committees, such as the Minister's Committee on the Budget, and those decisions ultimately get tabled in cabinet and approved there. So I would be surprised if, in fact, that this decision is not supported by cabinet. Contrary to what may be suggested by this question here. Question number 10, Jefferson, reads as follows. What steps has the Deep Development Bank of Southern Africa taken to reinforce municipal implementation capacity in light of the $7.9 billion that have been transferred to the bank for specifically this purpose? Now, Jefferson, I must say before I asked Mr. Fawcett to deal with this, to indicate that the DBSA is not an institution that falls within the purview of the mandates of the Department of Cooperative Governance. So we wouldn't necessarily be privy to some of the detail that this question seeks to have brought to the fore. But within the limited scope we have, I'm going to ask Mr. Fawcett to shine some light on some of the information we have at our disposal.
Thank you. So, as the DBS has indicated, DBSA, they report an account to the National Treasury for their support programs to municipalities. However, we do collaborate very closely with the DBSA on some of the programs that are aimed at supporting infrastructure delivery at municipal level. So this question really, what is being asked by the question is a matter that Treasurer and the DBSA itself can respond.
If I may now proceed to
Question
number
11.
When can we expect the tabling of the following reports for the portfolio list? A, the status of appointments of competent and suitably qualified municipal managers. B, those municipalities where appointments were made in contravention of the Systems Act and actions taken in this regard. C, the compliance of municipalities with the Property Rate Act and the actions taken in this regard. D, the status of the 150-plus forensic projects called for from municipalities. Mr. Sidi of my left will fill this list of four questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson.
As indicated during the previous engagement with the committee, all these reports will be made available to the committee after the end of the fourth quarter, which is end of March. The last step that we'll do is to present the reports to MIMEC, just for MECs or local government to confirm some of the statistics that they have been reporting to us. It is only after that that we will be able to come and present the report in the committee, which is to the committee. I just have to indicate that the report on A, B, and D can be made available on a quarterly basis. The one relating to the compliance with the Municipal Property Rate Act is an annualized kind of a report which will be made available as indicated after the end of the fourth quarter. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may proceed. Question number 12 reads as follows. What movement has there been between the various categories of municipalities as a result of the Back to Basics program? How many are currently classified as dysfunctional? Of these, how many were classified as dysfunctional at the start of the program? And have A, improved out of the category, B, regressed into, I suppose, into another category, or C, remained against? Mr. Paul C, who is heading our fundraising program, will now bring this question to us.
Thanks. Thanks, based on the original back-to-basic assessment that we did in 2014, so there were clearly sort of unevenness in the municipal performance, and that's why we came up with the three categorization. Our view is that after the first year of implementation, it is still able to detect significant shifts or movements within those categories. However, Chair, based on the monthly reports that we continue to receive from municipalities, we're beginning to observe trends in terms of performance around the five pillars of the base. What we're currently busy with, we are developing a maturity or a graduation model. At a particular point, we'll then look at comprehensively those municipalities that have moved within the categories. The observation that we've made, we've observed that in some of the municipalities where we've seen regression, it's actually in their provinces where there's weak provincial culture departments. But also, we've observed the correlation between poor full-time leadership or instability, high vacancies, and then some of challenges on agents in the municipalities, which impact also on civil services. And these are some of the observations that we get through the monthly reports. But at this stage, I think that after 1 year of implementation of the program, we cannot really talk about any significant shift. Even some of the municipalities that we identified as doing well, we might find that on certain pillars, there's sort of challenges on one of them. Thanks.
Jefferson, thanks very much. If I may now proceed to the next question, question number 13, which reads as follows. Why has the Local Government Laws Amendment Bill been narrowed in focus to only address amendments to the Municipal Structures Act? And Dr. Naidu, am I right, will pose this question specifically.
Saying that the Structures Amendment Bill will focus largely on amendments that have been sponsored by the Independent Electoral Commission, and as such will deal with matters relating to municipal elections. So why separation? Perhaps informed by two major things. The first being that as the Back to Basics campaign unfolds, there are various lessons that we're picking up that would perhaps need amendment to the Systems Act. First thing. Second thing is matters relating to the Municipal Demarcation Act. Perhaps when the board presents their APD, they may also allude to this, but coming out of the Section 22 request that the Minister had made, there were various lessons that were picked up by the Demarcation Board as they had gone around about their business to determine these new areas that we have. So we believe that an intergovernmental discussion needs to take place with a larger audience to inform amendments that would be proposed to the Systems Act as well as to the Demarcation Act. So that's the input or response to that question here.
But to put it simply, Mr. Emerson, the amendments that are required in respect of the Structures Act don't have deep-seated political, policy input. These are things we believe can be done very quickly. They are generally non-controversial issues. If anything, they simply would make the life of the IEC and other members very easy, in that they actually provide the greater clarity in respect to matters related to elections. And being aware of the fact that this election would have to happen sometime between May and August, you don't want to put these proposed amendments in a bigger bill called General Laws Amendment Bill, which might contain in its matters that require extensive engagement, because then you subject the fate of things that could be done quickly to the fate of those things that require protracted engagement. So we think that there are things that can be expedited on their own in separation from the rest, and we should allow those to happen sooner rather than later. Chairperson, I'll then proceed to question number 14. What steps are the department taking to assist municipalities with A, revenue collection, and B, expenditure management? Does the department support SALCA's call for a national debt collection agency for municipalities? If so, why?
These are the following steps that the department is taking with regards to assisting municipalities in their revenue collection. One, like I've said before, that before any collection is made, municipalities are supposed to have the credit control and debt management policies and bylaws in place. So we are assisting the selected municipalities in reviewing their credit control and debt management policies. And we are ensuring that when they adopt their budget policies, these credit control and debt management policies and bylaws are in place. Secondly, we had a project called the Revenue Enhancement Triple Project, which we initiated in 12 municipalities. We completed 6 feasibility studies, and then we realized that most of the municipalities were not really up to taking up the recommendations that were coming out of the feasibility studies. We have now partnered with the Development Bank to provide some form of technical support to this municipality. Added to some of the issues relating to revenue collection, especially as it relates to the government debt, we are jointly leading a team with the Department of Public Works to support all municipalities to collect outstanding debts In other respect, service providers have been appointed to audit and verify the debt claimed by municipalities and this payment are processed by the Department of Public Works as and when the verifications are finalized. Chair, we have also indicated in this committee before that government through the PCC have agreed that for those government departments that are owing municipalities, even when the account is not verified, they should pay almost 8% of the current debt, pending the resolution of the credit that they should be having. With regard to the issue of the expenditure management, we believe this is the purview of the National Treasury. Now, on the last issue of the collection agency, the call for the collection agency by Alga, at the moment within the department, we don't have the full benefit of their proposal. We will have to await the full proposal from them, and after that proposal has been studied, then we'll be able to provide a view from the department. Thank you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. The last question we have on the list is question number 15, and it reads as follows. What steps will the department take to ensure that municipalities who are owed money by outgoing councillors are reimbursed before payment of the once-off gratuity for non-returning councillors? Mr. Skinny will also go to the question, Chair.
Thanks, DJ. The code of conduct for councillors provides that a councillor cannot owe a municipality for more than 90 days or 7 months. If a councillor's term of office ends, the municipality will have to quote that councillor as a normal debtor and follow him or her through the normal application and enforcement of their credit control policies and bylaws. Chair, you remember in the last meeting, I indicated that what we have as the department is a once-off gratuity. And I said, if there are other initiatives that honorable members may think about, they can also suggest to us. But what we are doing with the issue of the once-off gratuity is that before we pay the once-off gratuity to councillors, we first check if those councillors are owing either us and or the municipality. And then if they are owing the municipality, we first pay the municipality before we reimburse the councillor their one-off gratuity. So that is what I can say around the issue of the steps that we have or the lever that we have as the department to be able to ensure that councillors or outgoing councillors that are owing municipalities, we use a particular instrument. Otherwise, it goes back to the credit control policies and bylaws of the municipality, and they will put that particular councillor as the normal debt. Thank you.
Chairperson, that concludes the number of questions we've received and the number of responses we have prepared to those questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think it was a useful exercise to have this question at hand. Okay. Madam, want to make a point? Okay.
Yeah, just a couple of follow-ups. And I thank the department for their answers. Some of them were a little bit evasive, but let's deal with them. My first follow-up is about the boundary determination, the amalgamation of municipalities. And, pardon me. The issue here is,
it's going to cost municipalities a lot of money to align their systems to rectify staffing levels. If you have disparate staffing structures where one municipality is a grade 4 municipality and the other is a grade 5 municipality, and you now amalgamate them, you're going to have to align your staffing structure, and there are costs associated with that. Now, the municipalities are currently disgruntled. That is one of the reasons why we are going through this amalgamation process. Where are they going to find the money, if not in the municipal demarcation transition grant, to do this? That's the nature of that question. Thank you for the explanation about the equitable share. It doesn't answer this question at all. The question was not about the formula that is utilized for the equitable share. I know very well how the formula is derived, and I know very well what it is intended to do. However, we've seen an increase of costs at municipal level. The cost of water is increasing. The cost of electricity is increasing by 9.7% or 9.4% or whatever it is that NERSA agreed. And yet, the equitable share is increasing at less than inflation. Now, part of the function of equitable share is to fund the cost of bulk supply of basic services to indigent consumers. That's part of the function of equitable share. Yet, when those costs are increasing at a rate higher than what the equitable share is, I'm not talking about the formula allocation and how it's divided up. I'm talking about the actual quantum of money that is issued to the municipality. Then the municipality is getting deeper and deeper into trouble. I'm going to leave Mick for now. I could go on about that. But let's just talk for 1 second about the Municipal Disaster Recovery Bond. And I understand the purpose of the Municipal Disaster Recovery Bond is for post-disaster rehabilitation, etc. Let me use an example. If there is a fire and it destroys 500 shacks, is that not the purpose for which the Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant is intended to utilize, to help rehabilitate and restore and put that to rights? And if so, why is it so difficult for municipalities to access this funding, and why is it being reduced? That was the nature of that question. Then on ELDA, I understand fully that they are an entity of department, that they report to the portfolio committee as well. Surely as a department, you have some oversight over their activities, their functions, their expenditure, what they're using their funds for. And surely therefore you would have some input as to whether or not this 90 million rand that last year they didn't need, but this year suddenly they do need, isn't that what the function of the department is for? Then my last point goes to Mr. Fossey about the back to basics, and he said that 1 year is not sufficient time to measure whether or not the program has been a success. But surely you should be able to give us some statistics and see whether or not there have been any successes or failures, and if so, whether we should be continuing with this program or if we should be looking at something completely different. The question is very specific. How many municipalities are currently classified as disgruntled? In other words, have you been reviewing on an annual basis or a quarterly basis or a monthly basis? I know you have. Whether those municipalities are still in that category. How many have moved out of that category into a better category, and how many from a better category have now fallen into that dysfunctional category? And that would allow us, as a portfolio committee, to then evaluate whether or not the back-to-basics program is working. That might be a five-year program or whatever you want to call it, but right now we need to do oversight on you as a department, whether you are doing your job. And we can't do that if you don't give us the answer that we're looking for. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. the issues in the index on the
codation of HR methods.
clarification point made was where you have the coming together of a grade 4 and a grade 5 municipality. And perhaps to make it perhaps simpler, cite the Mbombela and Mujimbi mergers, or the Mangaung and the Laleli mergers. Let's get the figures there. So in the bigger municipality, you probably have around 3,000 to 4,000 staff. And in the smaller municipality, you would have between 300 and 400. And then in the bigger municipality, you probably would have about 300 to 400 vacancies spread throughout the organization. But the point being made is that perhaps the single organizational structure now that replaces the two that are presently there is an ideal opportunity to make things right. To perhaps fill those vacancies that are there with the merger. Having said that, it does not mean automatically that four comes to five. It is a practice that we highly, highly discourage. We are saying to the provinces affected and the municipalities affected in this regard that look at this as a brand new municipality that is being established come election day. And a simple upgrading of a 4 to a 5 is definitely not on cards. So let's say you have two municipalities come together. You have a bigger pool of senior managers. Instead of the section 46, 54 positions were filled there, you have an opportunity of rationalizing, picking from that pool through a legitimate process, the best municipal manager, and the section 46 managers that you would have there. So what we are pushing or nudging our provinces and these affected municipalities is to adopt that kind of approach, not an automatic four becoming a five. Perhaps in the past there were certain instances where that happened, but it is a practice, Honourable Member, that we are strongly, strongly discouraging. And we're hoping that with the proper management by provinces in this regard, that the way we see things unfolding actually happens. So, Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Did you? Chairperson, the question that was raised with regard to the Minister of Disaster Recovery Funds. I've listened very carefully to Honourable Member Willingham explaining his understanding of the Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant. But the question has to suggest that the grant should be accessed on extremely short notice to provide the need. And I said, that grant is not designed to do that. In order to provide relief, you need recourse to a different grant. But the first question is saying you've reduced the disaster recovery funds from 188 to 140. And I've answered that question. I said, that because the post-disaster assessment has been made and has been quantified and has come to that amount, why should we ask for more money when we know we have made an assessment? And we know the cost to buy it is less than 40 million. But in order to respond, to provide relief on an emergency basis, you don't need that grant. You need a different grant. And in fact, the Division of Revenue Bill and the Figures Act have in fact allowed movements across some funds, even across the spheres. That even municipalities that don't have enough money, they can always appeal to the province and make resources available in order to respond to a disaster on an immediate basis. And the law hasn't changed in that regard. And municipalities, if they don't have enough within their disaster relief fund in order to respond immediately, they can always have recourse to the provincial level to make resources available to enable them to respond immediately. So what I would like to emphasize is no municipality would be allowed to use a disaster recovery grant for any purpose other than post-disaster rehabilitation and reconstruction. So, I think
Perhaps there's something I didn't quite understand in the question that I posed, but that's how I understand. The final question, Chairperson, is the one regarding SALCA. It so happens that we have a former Chairperson of SALCA in the House. SALCA is a voluntary association. So, SALCA is a voluntary association. I don't think it's entirely correct, actually, to just specify SALCA as an entity of the department. But what would be correct is to say that because we make an allocation to it, we hold it accountable for the funds that we allocate. But to suggest that they are an entity like MISA or the like, no, it's not. It's not correct characterized as such. So, in that sense, we would hold them accountable on the resources we allocate to them. The 29.5 million that we allocate to SALCA accounts to us on that money. As accounting officer, I'm enjoined by law to require SALCA to report on that. They have obligation to account to me on everything else that they do. But the members of SALCA, being municipalities, would hold the helpers of SALCA accountable for the money that they contribute to SALCA as members. Because they are accountable officers in those institutions. They have to account for that money. It's not a concept that they should account for the rest of that money. Now, the 90 million that we're talking about over the MTF, that's an MTF allocation. In respect of that allocation, we will hold SALCA accountable. And if SALCA believes that they need that money and they've been able to make a credible case, that money should continue to flow, we will continue to hold them accountable for this. And they're happy to come at any time to this committee to give an account of what is it that SALCA has spent the money on and how we make sure that in fact that money is used for the purposes for which to allocate. That's what I'm happy to do at any time. That was nice, of course. Thanks.
So the one thing that was not...
I think the question that we agree with the Honourable Member that we, based on the monthly response that we receive from municipalities, we can begin to talk about the trend in terms of the five plans of activities. And the question, the way it's asked, is asking in terms of and the point that I was making is that what we're doing currently, we're looking at a scientific tool that will then assist us to determine the shifts and the movement within the categories. However, sir, we do have, based on this matter of course, we do have stats and data on the performance on all the fields, which a report we can provide to the community. In fact, based on those municipalities that are reporting, and then there's a team that we have in the department, the information that has been defined. But in terms of the shift within the categories, that's the point I'm making, sir. So it's still aim for us to actually make that determination. And we need a tool that then assists us to determine this. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Perhaps let me just simplify the point that Mr. Foster has made. Yes, we have three categories. But to assess whether or not a municipality belongs to one or the other category, you look at that municipality in relation to five areas, how they perform in relation to the five. What we're picking up is that some municipalities improve on in respect of other pillars, but not in others. So, if for example, a municipality has progressed in three, without a scientific tool, you cannot actually tell effectively whether you've shifted from out of a category or not, if you've only improved in the respect of three. Then we can see improvement, we can see the trends. Whether in reality they shift out of a category to another, you need a tool that can help you do that. And that's the point that we are emphasizing here.
otherwise. That tool is what would give us confidence to say to the committee, and yes, this municipality has moved out of this category to this category, despite the fact that they may not necessarily have performed excellently in respect of all the pillars. But we believe that this tool actually tells us that despite some drop in respect of some pillars and improvement in others, this is exactly where this municipality is now situated in terms of the categories that we have. And once that tool is available, we'll certainly share with the community how the tool works, and we will also share the results that we get out of that tool. But with regards to the detail of where the improvements are, without actually saying whether that represents a move out of one category to the next, that we can come and share with the community, which is the center point that was just emphasized. Yes.
Can you guess exactly what it is that they are doing with that subject and get their response on that? And secondly, I have a challenge with departments if they don't achieve their target. Because really, if you plan and you come to the community, we allocate a budget according to your plan, but you fail to achieve your target, then there's something wrong with your plan. And I'm not sure whether the department, if it fails itself to achieve a target, how will they assist the municipality to ensure that the budget that you allocate to them function? They achieve their target. The last one, when I asked the question to Florida last week, in terms of the debt that is going to the municipality. And now I get confused because she's saying it's not getting the NCC. And I don't think they've got the authority of how to ensure that departments that own municipalities, they do honor their promises to pay their debt. What is it that the department is doing to ensure that departments do honor their payments to the municipality?
Chairperson, the last one, will assist me. But I think he gave quite an elaborate response on our collaborative efforts with the Department of Public Works. Remember, departments of government and entities don't contract directly with landlords and so on, and they do so through public works. And when it comes to paying for services and the like, the Department of Public Works has a very important role to play. And we've indicated here in this response that we are working together with the Department of Public Works. Public Works has appointed a service provider that continues to verify invoices that are submitted by municipalities to different departments of government. Then such verification is to satisfy departments that have been forced to pay that money. But we've gone so far as to say that there is now a decision of the Presidential Coordinating Council in which all premiers sit, in which all premiers sit with the person, where it was agreed that even where invoices are being contested, that a certain percentage, I think up to 80%, can be paid to those municipalities. And the balance would then have to be settled at the point where that notification is signed. So that's where we are playing a role, to help municipalities get what it owes to them by the department. Chairperson, I have not added anything to the answer that's been given. I'm just shining more light on what has already been said, because I can answer. I mean, the
I think as politicians, we are not still within the department, but if you answer questions and say, I have tried to do this with me, maybe I'm then you should just try to do this.
Okay. All right. Let me try that again.
How are we assisting municipalities to get paid as is owed to them by government actors? We are working together with the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works is the landlord for all government services. And government departments have to pay for services they consume from the service. Municipalities invoice them. In some instances, where the invoices are straightforward, there's no contestation, departments pay. Where there is a contestation, describes here what process we've embarked upon. That working together with the Department of Public Works, in fact, with the assistance of Public Works, they have appointed an independent service provider. That does the verification of the invoices that are being contested by the department. Because when invoices are still in dispute, generally departments will not pay until such time that there is no solution on that. So in the meantime, while there's a contestation, no money flows from a department to any side. Now, I said, Jefferson, that that process we've had to form has helped us a great deal in that a lot of invoices that are in dispute have now been clarified, and that in respect of those invoices, money has flowed from departments to those municipalities. But I've also said, we've gone further and said, even in those instances where those invoices have not as yet been resolved through this mechanism that is put in place, the public works, we've sought a decision by the Prudential Coordinating Council, which basically says, even in those instances where an invoice is in distance, we would like to have those departments actually paying a certain percentage of what is that department is invoiced for. Now, this is necessary because an accounting officer, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, has a responsibility to make sure that you only pay when money is due, owing and payable to a set price. And that money must be verified. You need to be sure exactly what it is. If you're not set, you can't pay. But you would need another decision by a body that is qualified to do so, to make a decision that now allows you to almost pay in advance of your input being verified. But that is part of how far we have come. So money is flowing to municipalities. There remains invoices that are being verified. So that's basically what I was saying. Thank you very much. And I apologize if I perhaps didn't come across as very much. I apologize for that. But the other part of the question was, Jefferson, and in response to Honourable Member Milliam's question, I did say that, strictly speaking, SELDA is not a test of the department. But in a sense, they don't account to us on the basis of their day-to-day operations, because they're a voluntary association. Some accounts to its members, because they pay subscriptions. But because there is money that flows through our vote, allocated by the treasurer, to go to SELDA, we hold them accountable for that money. And I did say, if the committee wants us to account on what is it that SELDA has spent the money that we've transferred to them, we are happy to put an account to the place. And this 19 million rand over the next year, which is a 3-year period, if the committee wants us to put an account, we will, but we will only account after that money has been spent. And SELDA has accounted to us. We'll then come and account to the committee as to what role have we played. And we make sure, by the way, SELDA itself will also have to say part of it.
because that allocation is also passed by the department as part of the division of revenue. So they are equally accountable to this parliament as much as they are accountable to us, as the people through whom, or as the department through whom that money flows. So we will hold them accountable, but they will still account to the parliament, this committee, in that sense. So at any time when the committee feels that the money that they spend at the black an account, as to how have we exercised our oversight responsibility in respect of that money, as far as others consent, we will be happy to do that. So I'm not sure whether there is any aspect that I might have missed. Okay.
No. We will have taken so much time on this one. I wonder if it's possible. So otherwise, we sleep on this one in terms of 6,000 if we go through the migration calls. The other is this family. Honorable Masondo, Honorable Sergio, Honorable Fuleko.
Thank you very much, Secretary, for being generous. I want to ask a question, Secretary, that we have to pursue with this committee and the other people who are coming now. On both numbers, as I think is the very landlord question. Now, public works is the landlord in relation to government properties. One of the issues that is very worrying is the matter buildings in a state of disrepair, government business in a state of disrepair, in many, many municipalities. I have an experience of this in my previous life. Someone was somewhat in the we really do need to find out how many of these buildings are there in each municipality. And this range from former municipal and municipal buildings, but also national government buildings that are there. And I'm not being looked after by anyone. And some of these, because of the way they got into where the state is, with their answer, also have accumulated debt in terms of service, maybe home affairs, buildings, and so on. So that's the same thing is that. Because the things are in a state of disrepair, they also have a risk of encouraging criminal activity. I'm sure you understand this. That's one of the things that I've also specific names of individuals have said the beds there, long term. The people who stay there are no longer in. There's no administration in place to monitor what happens in there. The police, government issue from time to time, I'm sure you're aware that some of the criminals who are now represented in the area of police, whatever other activities, they run to those kinds of disappear. So it's not very local. That's why I'm raising. What do you do? Especially some of the issues have implications for everyone. We have speaking about the new community of citizens and environment. When we are not addressing some of the issues, it's a question that I think.
Okay, mine is very straightforward. What is the feeling of the opposing view of the party? If this money that you collect from treasury and becomes a cost to Salga can be stopped, what's your view?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think my question is
going to be... You are going to write out the question again. To then go down to the department. You must move for the time is not enough. You may end up not finishing what that you may have done on the page.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to note that DG has said whether the system is now is a desirable. Actually, one of the challenges in terms of the department being the conduit for Salga in terms of funds, because you're not an entity in the accounting at the end of the financial year. Have you assessed the other options in which the relationship can strengthen and so on? So just looking at global future in terms of if the link is monetary and financial, only to within that place for questions. What's that feeling of the department about the current arrangement and whether you feel that that arrangement is effective, whether the shortcoming which now can be strengthened? I was just on those lines.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of the landlord, I think it would be good to have that conversation with public works, because they are the landlord and they are responsible for part of the buildings that are in a state of disrepair. We don't mind being part of the conversation, but they are the least part of it. We will be happy to be part of that conversation. As to what the department's view is with regard to severing that role of your conduits. Government does not allocate separate votes to entities, even to government components, to non-profit organizations that have supported, say, through departments like social development and the like, to do the work of the state, to provide welfare services to people. But a vote is created for which a ministry becomes responsible. And that ministry then has a responsibility to make sure that then that money flows, and it flows to its budget, because that budget is going to be spent in furtherance of the objectives of that ministry at that point. So what, for an example, the two choices we have is to say to Treasury, don't give that money directly to Salga. And then you would expect the Treasury to hold Salga accountable for that money. It will not work. Because what Salga is expected to spend that money to achieve are objectives that are linked to the mandates of corporate government. So it makes sense that that money gets allocated as part of the books of corporate governance and financial affairs. Because what they do is the balance of that broader mandate. But we don't just give them that money, we hold them accountable for it. And we make sure that they can spend that money towards the achievement of those objectives. So that's how you ensure that alignment between what Salga. Salga can do all the other things that are not even related to our mandate plans. But if they spend the other money that they get from elsewhere, we have no way of saying, no, come and account to us for how you have done your rights. But we hold them accountable for the money that government gives to them for that purpose.
Okay, but it's in the... We have some meeting sometimes with some joint committees, there will be absolutely no harm to the joint meeting with the public works subcommittee. was so then it would have impact on the health department. But once building the coming center of criminal activity, because they have tended to cause a lot of problems for them. I think we'll raise that with the senior joint meeting in fact allowed to do. And well, I think we should thank the department for coming and the team, and thank you very much for members for the function. I hope that colleagues will do that from time to time. They want to ask you a certain question. Don't take it easy. Because questions are not meant really to trick staff into seek information. Therefore, once they're giving entire information, detailed information, it makes it easy for members of parliament to do their oversight function. And so it's not a dumb question. Because in the House, it's a different situation. The politician is there. And then you can trick each other anyway, more and more cheat them from that. But here, yeah, we need information to assist us to do the oversight function and present the department accountable for the activity. And I think that's very useful, and I thank you, Honorable Ham, and it's 15 questions, and if you had more other questions, they're very useful. Department came in to prepare. But also, they're saying that they don't bring 20,000 people here, only 200 questions. And it was very expensive. Man, I know anyway that this is one of those things that people support them to someone in housing. And then I think it's a great support of us. And then we can then work out nicely. And so that we did. And I thank you very much, colleagues. Okay, there's lots of streets we hear. But the necessary speed, because there's no money from your side to find more. And then more space you hear, until there's enough money. Thank you very much, colleagues. And we'll allow the departments to leave. And then we'll remain with our two colleagues that we invited. Municipal Demarcation Board. And the team that was dealing with the situation. And I'm not sure why they said it, but I want colleagues to request that we start the demarcation board. And also, we have colleagues are supposed to be going to detail the mission, the vision, don't say. We'll go to the real staff of one of the new issues that are there. We don't allow again a time to consume for them. Maybe with all the matters that have been raising with us, just to capture that area. That are strategic in nature that can assist the committee to do that work. All other details, really, all the engineers, details, we can read that and see with that. And welcome the leadership of the Super Demarcation Board. You know that we are working very hard. Very hard to do. The marketing are in Uganda has never been easy. They don't know how you start, but you have to that man. And let us allow them to give some thoughts and in their annual performance plans. But especially the real big ecosystem. Not necessarily land and plan, but can read all of us. I think they've been giving us information for a long time. And then a very strategic presentation will be very helpful for us to see some of the issues and also to the CRF. I know that you are doing all the intentions to account. I'm not sure if it is anyway. Wanting them to announce the government structure in the intentions. It's very difficult. But I think that this is also a center of the area. Maybe we should agree, colleagues, the CRL, the C, and COST, one mind to move, if you want to move, take some C and COST. We want to step out, so I think we are continuing with the business. And, Chairperson of the Board, maybe we should invite you to take the platform and then get us through on the critical issues that we want to raise the committee.
to you know very well with us, and my advice, the CEO of the board, Mr. Wani, and the CFO, Mr. Seth, they totally ignore that for the past 2 years the board didn't have a CEO, and for the past 2 years the board didn't have a CEO. Can you introduce that? May I request the committee to deal with this? I do have some evidence, but can you look at the problem? I thought this problem was mine to be something else. But the situation is here, so we will be looking at the application to run the presentation. But can you share if you allow me?
Yeah, just check a data piece of the
and therefore had to postpone certain activities. For example, the symposium on smart education review and lessons was planned to happen in the past quarters. But we couldn't ignore the lessons that were coming up out of that process to say, that's why I delayed this a bit and consolidated the process of upper boundaries as well as the what limitation process, so that when you go into the symposium, pulling together the academics, players in the sector, and everyone, legislators as well, into that process, we shall not be leaving out any lesson that might be material to that exercise. The other areas of non-performance relate to the HR matters, and matters that are supposed to be driven by HR in an organization, like view of policies, surveys to be done in the organization. The board, with limited capacity we have, particularly in HR, we unfortunately had during the period one official in HR dismissed and one in suspension. So the deliverables in HR cut a little bit. As the commission would see, now we do have people who drive the processes, the citizens, men here, assisted by the executives that are in the organization to make sure that the areas are now then a better focus. In the process, we also lost, through resignations, a head of research and a head of stakeholder management. Those are some of the factors that impacted on the 30% that has not been achieved. And I need to highlight that it is not very easy, or it wasn't easy to keep this two people. Due to limited funding, the board had this position on 3-year contract. And you imagine whenever there are new opportunities that arise, people who are on a 3-year contract would want to move out and get to where we better prospects. So that is that on the performance and how the board fared and areas where we had not achieved our target. And just quickly on the ATT, if I may go to the ATT for the current year, starting with the budget that the board has, still very, very limited, and of course guided by the baseline where it emanated, but we did receive 10 million additional from salary, and members have seen that, we explained a little bit that this 10 million is not an MCF allocation. It's a 10 million that's given only for the financial year, but in the outer year then there is still no funding that would assist certain activities to roll. And I need to emphasize that in the outer year, in this and the outer year, the request had been 29 million in this, the next, and the outer year. But unfortunately, we do understand the environment and the economic environment and the fiscal environment in the country. It wasn't progress for the board to get those allocations. And hence, as you can see, some of our ATP targets in this current year in our objectives include the question of revenue, generating revenue, so that some of the programs that the board will run will be funded from other sources other than the allocation from general. In other areas where we're talking about, for example, in research, when we're talking about partnerships, it is a question of seeing how we can be able to get the capacity that we require for research, which is very critical for a mandate such as this one, because decisions have to be backed by a lot of information, a lot of research, but also benchmarking with the international organizations. For that, we are forging relationships with organizations that do research, where we can, even if it's not about us getting physical money, but we are able to get partnership in research, and we can benefit from the research that we are conducting to be able to further the mandate of the board. That is just to emphasize some areas of the ATP. But also, members will realize that we have then planned for this symposium on demarcation review, lessons learned, looking back from when the God was established from the first boundaries that were established, so that we get to interact and get to understand the views of the public, the views of other stakeholders about certain areas that impact on legislation, that may impact on our processes, that may impact on how the board interacts with the public, for example, public participation, which is one of the areas that we have picked as the area, as an area of focus. So those are the elements where we are putting a lot of focus, but largely where we are expecting a lot of support from the country, your guidance, your participation in that exercise, so that we do, before we go into any other demarcation site, we have looked back to see what could have been done better, where the legislation has needed to be tweaked, and what the feelings of the public and stakeholders are regarding the demarcation process. I think those are the areas that I would like to emphasize over and above you being able to see them in terms of our ACP. Our target up here as to what we are intending to achieve by what time. Another area in relation to what I indicated about particularly traditional areas, that is over and above the traditional areas. There are a number of areas that already travel over municipal boundaries. We would like to not put the burden on individual people, to have a lot of applications later when the board could have done a better exercise, looking throughout the country where settlements are mounting that go over from the municipal boundaries, to be able to have an exercise of some alignment in consultation with the public, even before we could, you know, leave it out for individual applications. And sometimes people may pick us up and sometimes they may not. But it is incumbent on us to be able to identify those areas. Sometimes people live in those areas, they're not even aware that the settlements are crouching over the municipal boundaries. Those are some of the exercises that we clearly identified and targeted ourselves as to by when shall we have concluded those in order to be safe for the next cycle, which will be guided by a process that shall grant. For example, there have been questions as to how often and why should we be doing and revisiting boundaries. We believe that the symposium planned to happen in June, according to the target here, probably followed by consolidation and conclusion of the legislative review, would make it possible such that by the time we move into an area or where it might be for the visiting the boundaries, it would theorize that time whether the boundaries are done on the basis of the 5 years, 10 years, or whatever actually emanated from the engagement that the country would have through the symposium in 2022. That is basically what we can present in terms of the ATK, otherwise the rest are the challenges that we know of, that the world is facing. We flag them all the time when we meet with you, and we can only continue engagements that are robust, that are able to help us be on our feet, the advice that we get from the committee, we appreciate that, and we hope to be interacting with you soon, perhaps before the symposium, or the proposed legislative review, even before then. Thank you.
Okay, good.
A quick one, in terms of the HR, it remains really always the problem. It's all this one, the next one comes through. And I'm turning the corner around the issue of the HR. But I really appreciate the focus that has been done up to so far. And looking at the previous experience where we ended up paying a lot of money in the HR. And also my concern is based on the investment in your IT. Those two departments not being together, how are you able to turn the corner? Because these are critical in the department. That's where you measure yourself, that's where you develop yourself going forward. But that's where also you get the major challenge. I appreciate the information you submitted, but I think there are a lot of my stuff. When I'm turning around the corner,
thank you very much. So I welcome the position that the chair for a bunch of the chair myself. And chair, on the issue of the chair respect of traditional parties, just I don't know, speaking about the poison of lessons learned, maybe of this job in the government, maybe as a food thought for that particular the implications of this issue one. For traditional leaders, you have to sit on traditional and municipal councils. And then that implication meaning that right now double part in terms of exhibition is a so the considerations around in terms of how can we actually go around that because it does cause and to bring it just a bit more to the extent to which you have got. And I know you've spoken about this too in terms of the minimum number, maximum number you can have in the world in terms of each category. But here you have a situation where the two traditional areas falling into one ward, and the challenge in that respect is also, it sort of just becomes a ripple effect in real of what can be done to actually look at that more closely because it does cause some discrepancies. And Jay, if I may, the issue of 161 is Johannesburg, I think it was 61, Johannesburg, 65, and Ward 89 now, where there's also now issues around the processes of consultation.
I really think that one of the jurisdictions, the municipal demarcation board presentation, I was struggling to, I was turning all these pages when the chair was presenting. I was not really sure which page where the chair is. I know that she was summarizing, but she was almost presenting a summary of the summary. Could not follow, at least myself, I could not follow what she said. So I think I understand them, it took a long time when we were discussing, when we were interviewing the but I think we might take an opportunity for us to be in the municipal demarcation board. Precisely because they are presenting the annual performance plan, which we are going to use all the accounts for the rest of the year. So I'm really going to make that question. We must create an opportunity for them to come back again so that they can deal with the actual APT. Even the performance reporting against the performance objectives for the three quarters, I don't think the chair was able to go into the discussion. I don't blame him because we're given them. We have not given a sufficient time. That's the number one chair, and I hope that I will appreciate the chair to agree that we must have them again in the near future. Just one question which the chair has touched upon. Saying that the mandate of the demarcation board is to delineate the work for purposes of elections. You know, municipal wards are spaces where communities live, where planning takes place, where delivery takes place. And I know that most political parties also organize themselves according to those municipal wards. The continuous change to the ward impact on a number of things. Impact on the plans that the municipality has to provide services to those wards. Impact on life in general of the communities who are staying there. So I don't know whether we should continue to accept that those are unintended consequences, because I can't understand it. At some point, we have to come to a point where there is stability in the local spaces, so that proper planning can take place, life can be organized according to those small units of the municipality. So I guess there's a question that probably needs to be engaged on during that training that the chair was talking about. I've got other questions, Chair, but because a not detailed presentation was made, so I might not have read this document properly, because for some reason also I have seen the first one. But just as an issue that I raised in the last meeting, I'm happy that the board now is beginning to properly become anchored to be stable in the form of appointment of senior committees. And I hope that the board will also finalize the issues around the HR, because you need to have a proper HR department so that you can be able to attend to things around organization of the board. But now I've received a letter that we responded to the chair on the previous CEO. And I'm a bit worried when I read the letter, because there are certain questions which are still in that. For instance, just go into the university. You indicated in the letter that over a period of 2 months, the attorneys which were appointed, which ultimately did not do a good job, had cost the board about 634,000. Now that is a lot of money. And I wonder if the board is taking steps to be able to understand exactly what were the cost drivers, why such a lot of money was charged in a period of 2 months. If you compare that with the other attorneys which were appointed by the board, which had cost the board, I think about 7,000. Now, the two are not comparable. On the one hand, you have got attorneys who are appointed to look into the letter of the figure CEO, who cost the board about 600,000 only in 2 months, which, to put it bluntly, they let up. Because whatever that they brought on the table could not survive the test of scrutiny, so to speak. So you might not be having answers now, but I think when we engage again, we'll just want to find out from the board what has the board done either to recover those costs, because for me they are substantial compared to the quality of the work that those scheme of attorneys were appointed produced at the end of the day. So the response raises more questions than answers. I must say that I accept the decision that the board has taken. to do a cost-benefit analysis, whether to proceed with the matter or whether to settle and stop under the board. And I think the board is taking a proper decision to settle with the former CEO and stop under the board. But the costs are really not acceptable. And I would like to get an explanation from the chair of the board. Thank you.
In determining the voting station, where do you get the information in terms of placing VPs in the wards? Where do you get the information? Because quite often PLCs make recommendation to the board. But these recommendations, contravene the Electoral Act, where you find that the VD at Ward A is about 50 kilometers away from the ward and 10 kilometers nearer to VD in Ward B. That kind of a problem. It gives us a problem when it comes to assisting the IEC in running the elections, where you find that you have a problem when you have to place an agent in the ward. Now, my question is, why don't you people ask the MEOs who are on the ground to assist you in sort of shaping this kind of arrangement? Because quite often these recommendations come from politicians at local level. So this gives us a very, very big problem. And a candle will decide that now in the recommendation will decide when there is a call from your side that the PLCs must make input into your arrangements. They will a ward councillor will just say, this is VD, not in my favor, and therefore it must be removed from this ward and placed into another ward, far from the ward, like the one I'm talking about. Why don't you make use of not politicians but any also tell you and give you object, the actual distance between the VDs in the ward? Because this gives us a very, very, very big problem, and it creates infights within the PLC, because opposition politics in the PLC will always object, because this unreasonable, changes that have been made by individual councillors. In other words, they are actually saying to you, demarcation, do this, and you just sanction. Because they are majority, they sign on that card and say, this is what we wish to happen, because opposition members are in the minority. These things take place. It can be that an individual can decide to the board to say, I no longer want this VDs must be incorporated into another ward. How do you ever have such that kind of problem? Are you aware of these problems, or do you just accept the signed card from the PLCs?
Thanks, Jay. Just two quick questions. The first is, I'm concerned about the massive increase in the budget for compensation for employees. It's a 14% increase year on year, and I'd like to get some explanation as to that. And then the second is, the past couple of years when the board has presented its APP and budget and had interactions with the committee, it's raised the issue of outstanding legal matters as a risk. Can we get an update as to what the current status is of various legal matters before the board, and what sort of time frame we're looking at to having those resolved?
Okay, we can invite the board. There is one club given to us 7 days before the meeting. When are there the report given to us?
The
annual
report or the
presentation? To our annual performance plan.
Thank you.
It is important that members get this information on time. Because when they come here, they shouldn't get the information this morning to debate it again this morning. It makes it very difficult. You know. Some of the meetings get so long and they never started. And just ensure that this member finishes giving their focus. They will see they're not through. Sometimes on Thursday, members appear on Friday. Can be difficult. It was 7 days before the health crisis today. But then the intention was to allow members of parliament to read. When they come to meetings, they're ready. Meetings become very fruitful, very short meetings, but very strategic in nature. That was really the purpose of doing that. Setting up to that, the members in our time would have finished not be knowing about this report. And so I did the signatures to circulate it to members. Even those who make presentation, that doesn't assist them to present when members are not invited, because it's very difficult for them also. So they present here, you know, for members also what they might have, but also to make to propose something strategic in their way. And that's why that is the main purpose really. That's why we want this thing to happen. And okay, I think administration will do it again.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just talk to three of the questions and rest the teacher and the CEO will deal with them. If you will allow me to leave up to the rest of you that I just
said. Yeah, we're
on that paper. The question of the meeting, maybe let me just rephrase that. We often find ourselves engaging with the legislation and not what the board is supposed to do. The board is supposed to implement the legislation as it is. And that is our challenge. That's what we are doing. And whenever we engage, we engage on why are you doing this? What is the law that we must do it? And perhaps indeed this is engagement with yourselves and other players in the sector system so that we get the law to be what the people want it to be. At the moment, for example, with the VDs, the board has got nothing to do with the VDs. The VDs are a product of the IEC. And the board, as the law says, we delimit what after consultation with the IEC. Come in again when we have to be the local government elections. Our building blocks become the very VDs that we obtain from the IEC. And a process that determines how VDs move is the criteria. Let me give an analogy of the city of London. After 5 years, in 2011 when we went for elections, the number of registered voters qualified them a given number of councillors and therefore 130 wards. This time around, a given number of councillors established by the MEC following the formula published by the minister and 135 wards. Now there has to be 5 new wards created in the city of London. And the space doesn't change, the same space, but 5 new wards have been created by board. Now there's no way that can tamper with the existing boundaries because you want to create 5 new wards in the same space. As a result, over 60% of the wards changed in configuration. And they had to change because other new wards had to be incorporated. What we do engage with the people and show them the criteria, show them the numbers that your wards have to be this size. They have to contain this number of registered voters, not beyond, not under, with a margin of 15%. Now, that's already limiting, even as we're saying we're engaging with the public. You might want something else, they'll say, but this is limiting my community. But the overarching elements are the number of registered voters, the norm, and other elements that take precedence over and above what the public might want. So the board is, in the long run, guided by that. We can get input from a number of people. What is the group? What is the individual? But ultimately, this has to be tested against the criteria that are provided in terms of what a ward should look like. They should be contiguous, they should be, you know, within the norm, otherwise they are not legal wards.
the city of Johannesburg, for example, now that I'm there, honorable chairman, the board is engaged with all the stakeholders in that area. We went there, we met with people, I mean, the leadership of the Denver community, the councillors, the indigenous, together with the city of Johannesburg, and we got to understand the real problem, which had been the perception that a hostel had been split. The ward boundary runs through the hostel. And as they put it, it's like you could see one ward and sleep in another ward. That is how dramatic that was. But when there, we looked at it as a board, we showed her what the challenge was perceived to be, and we went back, we found that no, the perception is not real. We made a response to say, this is the map, this is how it looks like. It's not where you thought it, you know, the boundary, the word doesn't run where you thought it runs. That's how the World City Fire Denver matter was dealt with. We're hoping that the community will find comfort in the response that has been sent by the board following our inspection we had there in the hostel with us. After the meeting, unfortunately, we had a meeting and we went into an inspection that was not planned. So everyone was rushing. We just arranged the venue that, okay, the board has seen the problem. Go and look at you. Go to a drawing table and respond. We now have, you know, finished the problem level. We know what the problem is. So we have the response. We haven't received feedback. And in that regard, we're doing a quick analysis of such areas countrywide where people might be having perceptions of where the boundary runs, maybe sometimes, which is not what the map, how the map reads. That analysis will help us. Much of the process is closed. We'll continue to engage with the people to understand them and get to the real issues that concern them. The word in this assist delivery unit already indicated that it's a legislative that it's not knowing that this function is very important of planning of service delivery, what the words are. So that's the only space where people get to interact directly with, you know, what is it that's coming last. That's where the actual delivery takes place. But that function is not legislated anyway. As a result, it might have been one of the criteria that we have to take into consideration when we're going to work. As a result, it might have been taken into consideration with the basis of cycles within which what limitation has to take. At the moment, the law requires that what limitation is to 5 years. And we are there to just implement the law. But we can only share lessons and suggest that we hope should go into a legislative review. Let me just close from my side with the issue of the previous CEO. Honourable Member has analysed the report very well, and indeed, unfortunately, we are not in a position to talk to how the cost escalated, the legal cost escalated as they did, and hence we, when we analysed that, we thought this cannot be allowed to go on. You remember that the CEO was suspended before this board was appointed. So when we were appointed, we found that the CEO was on suspension and lawyers were already waiting on the process. He had been appointed and they were waiting on her case. That is the process that we looked at and realized that just two courses cannot be allowed to go ahead. We will be much more by allowing the process to keep going, to continue. Actually, the main beneficiary of that was just the lawyers more than anybody else. Can I be excused, Chair, and the CEO and the Deputy Chair will continue with the other?
Can you allow her to
be
because I think the flight is a difficult thing to get. Unless you do have some 2 minutes more to listen to one of the things. I think she requested to get to the okay, but the people is here. Yeah. Okay, just thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will arrange an admission. Just come in. Thank you.
for the meeting. I think the point I was making, Chair, was request the board to follow up on the issue of the cost, the escalating cost. Because for 2 months you pay at least more than 600,000. That should be something that should cost a concern for any board. So what I'm simply asking, which I thought that the chairperson is going from chair to chair, when I'm checking the request, you come back to the report to chair. What is it that the board is done? Remember the CEO, the former CEO was suspended few days before the expiry of the board. Was suspended just to be addressed on the 12th of February. And the term of the board was coming to an end on the 19th. So 7 days before the term of the board comes to an end, the suspension, they appoint the firm of attorneys. The firm of attorneys charges in 2 months more than 600,000. So I'm saying, surely we should be able to be concerned, all of us, about this exponential cost. So the request was that the board must give us a report about this. Because it has caused the board more than, as a result of the suspension, it has caused the board over 2 million. Because it settled with the former CEO a 12-month salary, which amounted to about 1.6 million. This firm of attorneys were paid about 600,000. There were other costs also that were involved. So I'm saying, can we find out from the board as to why we spend paid more than 600,000? Because for 2 months, surely shall it be just much. Thank you.
Members, the point is taken, and as you requested, you will take this back and provide a written reply to the commission. With respect to the HR, RTC, and increasing the compensation for employees and outstanding legal matters, I'll ask the CEO to respond to that, and then I'll do some of the other matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to Honorable Embassy. Just another response to the questions I said. The question raised by a member on the cost of labor or the budget on HR. If you look at the budget before that, it wasn't the budget that excluded major appointments that the board has made, CEO, CFO, senior financial officer, cabinet secretary. So with those positions filled, obviously the pictures is all that. Then the second part is that the board is mandating aggressively pursuing the strategy of insourcing. So we're strengthening the research component, stakeholder management, and ICT. We really wanting to have internal capacity to manage this core function that will exist in the life of the board itself. The second question, I want to agree that we had some challenges related to HR, and the chair has alluded to the fact that interventions we're making. We are currently filling up the position of the Executive Director for Corporate Services that will oversee the portfolio that includes HR, ICT, legal, and stakeholder management. We are sure at least it's officially do that. But as soon as the legal processes, the disciplinary processes that are currently underway in the HR department, we don't get sense of stability in the, you know, in that the department. Also in question of ICT, we also concede and agree that if you look at the vision of the board, we say we want to be center of excellence or special hub. So the idea, we can't be center of excellence on special hub without necessarily strengthening your ICT. We might not have spent the allocated budget on ICT in the last financial year, largely because of the intervention that the vision of the board to take the sense of excellence in special hub. On our ICT, we are highlighting that we wanting to electronify the maps, creating interactive online mapping systems so that we're really becoming an electronic-based online knowledge management hub on issues related to space. So you must first have the hardware and then and the software to actually do that. So that is the problem that we've got advantage with him. And then we will be reporting to the country first on that one. But same with legal methods, I think they are almost at the close end because of the major one were related to the Section 22 processes. The only one that is still pending, we thought that that letter was almost close until 11th hour. We received the notification to say with part 2 of the DA case. So that is the only major legal assembly matter. We will be going to the court, if I'm correct. We'll be going to the court to deal with that matter. I think it's in April. The other matter that is currently before the court is the Mwali matter up there in Limpopo. I think it's also been subjected to the court somewhere in the on the 15th of April. We'll be going to court on those two matters.
Thanks, Theo. Members, I think that what's been quite clear, and which we've had the announcement of this committee for a while, that when this board took office, it had to deal with the engine that was having to be fixed at the same time while decisions were being made. And when we came into office, there were issues of the CEO, the issue of HR, in a whole range of stuff, including the capacity assessments and so forth. At the same time, we were finalizing the outer boundaries, and just to be sure, we had sorted that out, the long-term Section 22, which the law allows the minister to do, and that took a lot of time and resource from the implementation board. And you see it in our report, when we report on some of the things on our performance for the last few quarters, the impact that has had. So while we've had to deal with that, we've also had to fix the engine in terms of stuffing and legal stuff and all that other kind of stuff. We're now on a more even keel. And for us to bring, and the reason I mention that, because people have mentioned the issues of the impact of this board demarcation, the formula for demarcation, stability in those cases, and so forth. And this board is very conscious of the fact that South Africa as a whole, and the world in general, but South Africa in particular, is at a particularly crucial time. I mean, we've seen the issues in Parliament, we've seen the issues around the country, our government and local governments to deal with this and things, that there's an increasing recognition that the space we occupy at the dawn of democracy is not the same space that we occupy right now. And that we need to rethink the way we should do a whole range of stuff, whether it is the way we govern, how we focus on poverty, how we focus on job creation, the types of jobs we get, and so forth. And that has an impact on the way we invest in local spaces. That has severe implications for us as the local demarcation, as a means of demarcation. Because you find, you know, in some areas you can draw the space the same way, the issues will be the same across wards. Whether you go to Alexandria and have 5 wards, 10 wards, the issues in each one of those 5 or 10 wards will be the same. But they're not dealing with the issues. And I think as a board and the symposium we have mentioned, the issues of the knowledge hub is directed towards saying, look, we are a very important part to the debate on developing the local government and developing government as a whole. And how do we play our part? Because demarcation is not simply a technical process. And board-based planning isn't going to solve this conflict. In fact, board-based planning is a mistake, and the fact that some of our governing institutions insist on board-based planning is a mistake, and creating unrealistic expectations in your people on the ground, because you can't do board-based planning for a year and be in South Africa today, and I'm happy to debate that with you. The point I want to make, members, we are very conscious of the challenges that South Africa faces at this point in time. And the way in which we are drawing, and I'm going to use the word very crudely, the way we are drawing the line has impact. And it has impact for several reasons. And we are very conscious of that. And we want to engage and invite people into that process so that when we look at 2021, which is only 5 years from now, if you look at the local government to 2021, we have to consider the issues of secondary cities and the constant discussions of the policy government around that. We have to look at the issues of urbanization and the impact that has on that. The impact of the declining mining, the fact that China and other countries aren't buying the resources that they have, the impact that has on deep rural areas. So all these things have impact on demarcation, and that is what we want to start creating for 2021.
Thank you very much.
find time to come back. Of course, it's a very hard time. We don't allow him to do that partition time next year. Unless they meet during the night. And remember the poem of all my children, the second of April. When they come back, it's budget day. Two folks with they three main voices, yes. Members will be here until 12 or 11. Very, very intense, very intense, very intense. We may not have other time to call them before August. We may not have time to interact with them before August. We advise the full life members if they do have questions that are here to be asked. The question that Honorable Mokulan is raised, that it should also be answered in written form. And Honorable Mokulan can put a question in written form, just get the answer, that when you come back at least, some of the issues that in engagement with the members of the No, I'm saying that it's always the best idea to put a question. When they come back, because under the pressure that is put for, allow the accounting is very difficult for us. Therefore, they should do so. Because if we are going to meet in August, maybe in September, then we may not have another sufficient time to write to deal with some of these issues. I think it would be a good idea for the team also. To be prepared to answer some questions in terms of writing answers. Because they're really meant for real answers and then to explain the logic and the issues, the cost and the issues. I think it would be preferable when we meet them, even if it's in September, you have time to again to say what we have done and these are issues. And maybe the answers then could be very helpful to assist all of us to understand the challenges that we have. And then we take the point as we report that inherited the suspended CEO. When we came in and suspended 17 before that, we understand all that. But of course, we are assuming they hired us from the previous four. And then we must then ask them to answer some of those questions. I think that's why we see the this. And I think that there's the same one, I think we have a question of joining back in another area. I think that's why. Of course, there are some boundaries related to them in the traditional area. It doesn't mean that because there were some people from the LM shifted, they simply shift and go to the Minham shifted, not at all. There are some boundaries, that's why elections are and so that are all that. And that's why this was. No, I think we should accept the board to look at some of the issues, and when we are inviting you, we have some time for discussion. And again, all documents 7 days before this issue. I'm very helpful that you that. You is not in your interest. We have members of parliament who have not even read your documents. Because then the engagement becomes very important. That is your strategic area. And they may raise these things or give them to them on time. I think we must do that all into the and we move to another time once we on our side to deal with the CRL. That there will be too many issues that are really complex and that too small now. More time to listen to the professors and comments. I'm going to look at the men that are which pipe they are using. I think they're very exciting. But I too can also capture the quarter summer of their report and hopefully colleagues will have some time again to make follow up on this. We're not going to, unless we are prepared to meet the case we have that. There are 3 lines sitting for this week from today until Thursday. 3 lines sitting
there was no time for members. The application for meeting what they assessed had to go beyond, not even two, beyond one day. And then I think that's the level of them. Can we invite the leadership of the other?
We see it as a really sick sector.
Okay, thank you very much.
Children's Act that talks to this, and then the challenges that come from there.
And that was the whole issue of China, the cultural practice of China. We've also been discussing and debating this issue with a whole range of people and the media. And our first position has been that to kind of push the cultural practice simply because other people are abusing it, and that we must then enforce the existing laws that are against the abuse of women and children. And then the issue of recycling of grace, we've also been very much engaged in issues of the recycling of grace, and we've looked at how, you know, municipalities reuse grace and how they put different people into one grave and how that is culturally and religiously unacceptable. So I engage in the relevant municipalities, especially the municipality, to find out to find alternatives. In terms of the HP of 2015-2016, we are very much able to say we've achieved on our target, and actually we've exceeded our target, although you can see that with the budget we have, but we've done more than we had set out to do, and this will be affirmed after the auditor general has looked at the audit. But our own audit has reached our target and exceeded them. And the exact things that we did in terms of the project, one of the main issues that I'm sure you'd like us to delve into is the issue of the investigation that we've been looking at, the investigative study on the commercialization of religion and the abuse of people's belief systems. We have been looking at a whole range of things, and honorable members and honorable chair, you probably be aware of what has been happening. And most of it has mainly been around the issue of which religions have received summons. But maybe let me start with the summons. We decided to go the route of summons because our act allows us to do that if we think it's necessary. We had done a spectroscopy to test what was happening on the ground. And our findings were that first and foremost, the honorable men of God were not willing to participate. So we knew that going to provinces on a prayer that people will come will not deliver, and then of course we'll become wanting in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure when the time to report. So we said, looking, knowing what we know and looking at the issues of the fiscal and the money that we don't have, but also looking at the PFMA issues around fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we informed the relevant and umbrella organizations that it was a route of issuing summons so that we ensure that people who come and we have to follow the act as it stands in terms of swearing them in and ensuring that they do come. We did this across the board because we had to be mindful of not targeting certain religious leaders or churches or whatever. So we went across the board. Unfortunately, you know, the media doesn't report normally. But the chief rabbi was there, the mulana here in Cape Town was there. We've looked at all religions, including Rastafarians, Baha'is. Everyone was involved. It's just that the excitement happened with the pastors and bishops and archbishops who then wanted to do things in a different way. But otherwise, it was even across the board. And we had several meetings to explain what we're looking for. The main things that we're looking for was whether there is a structure of governance. We're not looking at issues of doctrine. The final issues are outside of the framework. Most people believe what they believe in. But we said, even within that, we need to look at how, whether the church is registered, whether, you know, the assistance within the church of governance issues, and whether given within the freedom of religion that what they are doing is also constitutional. Because if it's not within the constitution, then your doctrine, there's something wrong with your doctrine if it goes against the constitution. And we're still
engage with them will be finished next week. Our last conference is next week, tomorrow by the Northern Cape, and then Guman. We have started writing the report, which we hope to take the lead towards the end of April. That will cover what it is that we are recommending. How do we make this thing work better for the nation? And knowing what to know as to what is out there in terms of people's belief systems being abused, whether there's commercialization of religion or not, our answer is a resounding yes. Religion has been commercialized. You buy a prayer, you buy holy water, you buy holy bricks to bring to build your house, you buy holy cement. So that your house is not, you know, when there's a storm, your house is not blown away, other houses may be blown away in the vicinity, but you have to stand firm. So there has been a whole range of things that you would have discovered had you not gone into this process, and we've discovered that some people are, don't believe in education, so children are not being sent to school. Some of them are as old as 24 years old, and they've never been to school at all. And we're looking at how, what remedies can be put in place in terms of that. But what we'll be proposing is a rather drastic measure, which we hope the committee will line with us on this one. Because we already see all sectors are regulated. There is someone somewhere who says that what you are doing is acceptable. That as peer review, not government review, but that as peers, people sit around the table and say, yes, this education system is really not good for children to attend. Maybe they should go to school. So that maybe there's something called holy books. And can pay for bricks and can pay for water to cure HIV and AIDS. So we need a system whereby you hold the sector accountable. Right now, there's no system of accountability. And I think what has been very revealing is the reluctance of the sector to be held accountable. Understandably so. People have been running these things in the way that they're running them. To set up a church only costs you, you know, whatever you have, the tent and chairs and the lock, some music system, and you don't have to tell anybody. A lot of communities have complained to us around the noise levels. Everybody just put up a tent at the corner, the space, and they set up a church, and they don't know if communities want to do it or just manage that. So we feel there must be a registration process. We should bring it to the committee very soon in terms of what are the exact things we say need to be regulated, but definitely not the doctrine, but the other issues of how to make the system work better and how to make sure that there's a mechanism where you manage the system such that it doesn't get out of hand. And I think other issues we've been looking at is advertisements in the newspaper. If you've been talking to traditional healers, I'm sure when you look at the Daily Sun, Sunday Sun, and other newspapers, you see all the promises that are being made there that, you know, you bring the lottery, you know, do all sorts of other things. You have a short voice bring you money every day, how a psychology will bring you money, and enlargement of some body parts. All of those things you've been looking at and saying, they are an abuse of the political system. But really, you know it's not going to happen. And we've tried to pin down the people who have been placing the aspects. They refuse to tell you where they are. Just wanted to give them someone. So I've yet said traditional dealer who will tell you how to get hold of them. They say you must go to the, what's that building in town? The Joburg. What is that? The mall in Joburg, the old mall in Joburg. The taxi center, you must go stand there, the phone here, and you tell them what kind of clothes they're wearing, and then you'll be passed on from one to the other. So you can already see that it's a scam of one kind or another. And we've been talking to advertising standards authority. We're currently working with them to lodge formal complaints for them to remove those adverts. But we're also looking at the sermon on Sunday on Soweto TV, One Tail Again and Baby. You see, when someone advertises on those channels during a sermon, it doesn't feel like an asset, but there has been a court case with Partner Chris, and there has been a high court decision that those are assets. When someone says, the whole work I had today, I had this disease, and now I'm here. So it is an asset, and the regulations are very clear that for you to advertise anything, there must be scientific proof. We have been engaging the men of God, and they say, no, you can't prove the, you know, things from the Holy Spirit and from heaven, but in fact the rules are rules. Unless you can prove that your water and your face products, whether it's olive oil or whatever else you have, you know, fruits are also healing, t-shirts are healing. As you said, must have a scientific proof that this one has this disease. They bought the t-shirt and wore it, and they were cured. Here's the before and after, like everything else that is advertised. So we are going to find resistance from the men of God around this issue. Because some of them tell us they make, you know, the minimum of $1 million a month. So if you are making good money and charging people to see you, there was another debate over the weekend around the Prophet Bushiro was charging 14,000 rands to meet to him and get a prayer. So those things we still need to be regulated. Our people are desperate enough. They pay even when, you know, you might think they shouldn't be paying. So there is that we're engaged in, and we are wrapping it up. We started with the report so that we can pay with it as soon as possible. And as a nation, hopefully, we'll close this chapter and move on.
certainly the support on commercialization of religion is something that's long overdue, and I look forward to seeing the recommendations that come out of it. The issue of virginity testing, you touched on the issue of kutwala, you touched on. What are your programs for the next year? That's really what are you planning for the next 12 months?
We didn't go into that because it's not related to us, but I'm going to summarize points here. The issue of death and initiation schools, we're going to have hearings on death and initiation schools because we feel it's not getting better. You know, there are still too many deaths there. The issue of tribalism and race, and we feel that people are supposed to be social cohesion and people are supposed to be protecting communities, cultural communities. There's been a whole range of discussions and debates around tribalism, but we also feel we need to be getting into the issue of race and issue of language, because part of what we are mandated to do is to ensure social cohesion, to ensure multilingualism, and we've been monitoring the issue of it's about two languages, whereas constitutionally it was 11 languages in the country. Where are all the other languages when the debate is around the two languages? The discrimination and trafficking and killing of people living in albinism. Next, before the end of the Human Rights Month, on the 31st, we are launching this issue of killing of people with albinism. We've seen a resurgence, a notable resurgence, a new phenomenon, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, in the border. Where what you've seen in other countries like Tanzania, Malawi, is coming here and people order body parts. They come from those countries, order body parts, get the parts they need, go back home. So we are looking at that because people have a belief system that says when you know you use body parts or someone is advancing, you're going to be rich, you know, you're going to win the lottery. We're going to have all sorts of wonderful things happening. Mm-hmm. So we are working with traditional healers themselves and people with albinism to say, let's educate our people, but also traditional healers themselves to say, there's nothing like that and people shouldn't be, you know, buying body parts in the hope that this is going to happen. We're also looking at our community councils mandated by the Constitutional Act to build their capacity in terms of conflict resolution, because we feel some of the things ought to be settled on the ground. We can't be everywhere every time. How do communities themselves find ways of saying this pasta is out of order and deal with those issues rather than wait for years for someone from national to come and deal with those issues? And the issue of financial management, that they must have allowed to position. We've been made aware by churches that you know, they don't have those things. Some churches don't even have a bank account. They also the money goes into the account of the pastor or the prophet or the bishop or whatever it is. And there are two things we want to do. We want to propose legislation and policies in line with our rights. In terms of the religious sector, which we were talking about, traditional healing sector, there are amendments that have been proposed by social development and corporal punishment within families, and amending the issue of solar initiation, legal guardianship and adoption in terms of making them culturally sound. But, you know, issues of corporal punishment within families will touch on the religion and the culture issues. But people believe it's okay for you to say school shooting. Do this, but once you get into family issues, it becomes difficult for communities. The regulation issues, and we're looking at negotiating with the committee in terms of the draft bill on grades. We feel the issue of grades, if it's left to municipalities to deal with the issue without a framework, it's going to be very difficult to keep that going, because municipalities will not necessarily be sensitive people's belief systems when they do this. And then the issue of organizational efficiency, we didn't mind to all use our gripe around funding, and I think we're trying to create efficiencies, internal controls, electronic links and those casework systems. And then we're looking at following the HP Basin Capacity Building Workshop and training of Public Councils, non-conflict resolution clinics, trial CR rights campaigns. We're also looking at 4 research reports for this year. Legal services and conflict resolution will continue. 3 proposed draft bills, 1 on initiation, 1 on relation, and 1 on grace. We want to build 100% of the cases to end them and to see how, whether they can be resolved immediately. 100% review of those things in Parliament to monitor the CR and cultural religion and language, whether they are compliant. Guideline on the generalization of the law. We will be issuing those guidelines in the coming financial year, which we'll also discuss with the committee, because we feel the laws are being passed without there being a litmus test of whether these are culturally sound or religiously sound. And we want to have a document that says, in order to care for them, these are the principles. But we'll also be monitoring, because some of the laws are passed and then later on people complain that, you know, this thing is not working for us on the ground. It's in violation of our rights. And I could say with the whole issue of solar and the age limit, and even the king himself has said this is not working on the ground. So we need to start preventing such things from happening as opposed to chasing after the ambulance. The part of what we'll do is the normal thing for plenary meetings and for the Act, for Session 22 committees, and the portfolio committee meetings as we are having today. Discussions of higher learning structures, despite this structure which we reported on last time, is still continuing. And the strategy meeting with relevant stakeholders, which we will continue doing in terms of making sure that the voice of the CRL is there when issues that affect the RNN, and to look at those issues. And then there's the budget, in the coming year, 38,521,000, and then it's going to go to 40 million, and then 42 million. As you said in the past, this is way below what we have to do. I'm sure you've seen in the media when the men of God were saying, no, set up around, you know, just talk to us and then do the work thereafter. We couldn't afford to do that. So it does impact on the work, because then the consultations become limited. Because you can't afford to go around, visit them in the 9 districts per province, and then come back again. So it does create a problem when it comes to the implementation of the work, because you have to cut corners. And we told the men of God that, you know, the summons are a financial imperative. We can't sit in that bottle and pray and hope that they'll appear. Most of them won't appear, especially those that have something to hide. They only come if they have to come. So for us to have a test run and sit for 3 days waiting for people to come one time, I'm sure the committee will ask us why we have fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But also we can't afford the luxury. We know we're working on a very tight budget as a nation. We want to do what needs to be done, but it would be useful if we could have some more money, but not saying we'll be on a slow pace. We'll continue accelerating and doing more with less, but it would be nice to have more, to do much, much more.
Oh, lot of work for you. Parliament is going to be striving for years to pass some of this legislation. And it was a very detailed legislation. And Chair Mutula,
what flashes do you have in terms of these flyers? Because I don't think those are organized individually. Yeah, who normally works through flyers on the corner streets? prepared or don't have any education in order to have to organize those.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that one. When there are so many other people, then
thanks, Chair, and thanks, Commission. I think I would like to agree with the those who are saying that the Commission is really doing great. I think you have got your hand on the pulse. So I think you understood very clearly your task and really dealing with the relevant issues. And probably, but the way I'm looking at it is that you have entered a space which has not been regulated before. You have entered sort of uncharted waters. And that's why there's a lot of commotion around the space that you've entered. But I think you're doing a good job. We'll await the report. But I just want to find out, is there something that you can do, especially in the meantime, on the current hearings that you are conducting on the religious sector? How is the process going to be? You conduct the hearings, you give us a report, or are you able to intervene there and there if there are instances that you observe where there is clearly an abuse? I know that there are instances where, of course, because of lack of regulations, there will be difficulties. I'm sure that there are measures that have been put in the interim to try and stop, especially the abuse of our people by the likes of Bashir and others. I know I've noticed, I don't know whether it is an observation from the tribes, that there seems to be an influx of people from other countries who have observed that there is a space around these charismatic churches to make a lot of money from Zimbabwe, from Nigeria, from Malawi, from all these other countries who are coming to South Africa because land of milk and honey. So is there something that you can do in the interim to try and stop before you even present the report of recommendations?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also first and foremost, I could be thanking the colleagues that current conditions of both life conditions, I think, that have to be appreciated. Chair, I just wanted to, on the question of funds, which of course is the centers in the always, and to say, and it is highlighted areas of research that we want to do, and awareness and so on. To say, which other institutions of state and government are you collaborating so that you can let us shoulder all the costs of all these things, even, you know, 100%. For example, we're going to venture into the issue of initiation, the house of traditional leaders, and so on. The issue of them, which you spoke about, I know that temples at this point in time is not in a desirable state of organizational health, but at the same time, it's an institution that there. So if admin institutions of higher learning for the research program, so I mean, I'm sure that in the certain business, but I want to encourage that under the circumstances of budget constraints, let us venture into those areas where you strengthen your collaboration so that you're not alone range and some of the advocacy work that you are doing, which I think necessary. I think that would give the scope of work multidimensional approaches which are necessary for that kind of society as well. So, if it's there, I'm happy, but I want to encourage that it becomes a key focus now, because I think everyone is taking notice that the Federal Commission is coming back to that, and we want to
part of the commission. So I think that should be the position for one of the key priorities in the commission.
And that we need to import the skills from other countries.
And if people are coming in to make miracles, we will need scientific proof up front that you can heal, you know, scientifically. We may have to test you before you actually come in to say, okay, here's a person, here's someone with a medical degree, they test them before and after. So it's those things that we see. The regulation needs to come in very urgently, as if we don't close the gap, a lot of them will come in to try and make up. What we've been told by social development is that a lot of churches are now registered. But they're also not compliant. They register and they never submit the necessary documentation, like their annual financial statements and reports. So they register and vanish. And then they go to Home Affairs and get more people into the country. So it's a very difficult situation. And then the issue of funds. Yes, we signed an MOU with the National House of Traditional Leaders. We signed an MOU, for instance, with UNESCO. In this current study, it was part of it, as you say earlier on, is the issue of the credibility of our people. What is it that makes our people believe that the scientists can? So UNESCO, with the psychology department and other departments, they are currently in field work, working on, you know, what is it that makes people believe everything? If I say there will be a total ocean going to bring 1.8 million rand, why do you believe that? Because, you know, the very existence of a total ocean in your house should alarm you. You know, what makes people, I mean, you don't want the people in your home in your house because they're bringing you money or bringing you whatever. What makes people want to eat a steak? You know, and they call it chocolate. Why would you want to put yourself into that? Why would you want someone to jump on you with the shoes? And, you know, why do that? Because I think the bulk of it, rather than just tightening legislation, is to get into the thing and find out why our people are so vulnerable and why they believe everything and everything that is thrown at them. In order for us to prevent this from happening, we need a better understanding of what is happening with our people's psyche. Until 20, 30 years ago, people would not have swallowed their life snakes for any reason. I always say, you know, generally Africans and snakes don't go together, let alone eating a live one. Why did you eat grass? What is the thing that you think is going to happen when you eat grass and you wash it down with petrol? So part of it is to find out from the experts as to why these things are happening. So we've got that process with the institutions of higher learning in terms of research and in terms of initiation schools, working with traditional leaders, but we're also working with CODESA. They do, it's an NGO that works with initiation schools where they rescue young men who are at risk. So while we do all this, we say as we chase after the whole thing, we need to have some kind of prevention happening globally. So after this hearings, we'll then be going to hearings of initiation schools where traditional leaders, traditional surgeons, traditional nurses, where they've been dead. We'll then tell us what went wrong and the Department of Health, in order to prevent it, we need to find out what is it that is making young people die from such a simple operation. Something somewhere must be very wrong. So we'll also be going into that very difficult arena. But partnerships, that's how we're trying to raise funds. We're also approaching the private sector and other formations like foundations, you know, like the Diamond Foundation that is helping us raise funds. But we're also looking at partnerships with the government departments. We wouldn't have been able to do all of this if we were working on the 6 million things. So even as we move into prophecies, we're trying to find some partnerships with some mainstream churches in terms of venues, etc., etc. Those that don't see us as ungodly and devil worshippers. those that think of us in the positive. You know, so we are partnering with the whole range of people. Yes. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say the previous, this is our active room, and this is our commissioner. I'm sure you've seen him. Yes, the Valentine's commissioner's room is based in Lake. Yes.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say one of the first things, Chairperson, the commission, the many members might be interested in, is one of the first things the Chairperson did when she took office was to appoint a committee, a specific chapter committee, to deal with engaging with the business community and the climatic community. And that has paid off in different ways. I think if one were to talk about the innovation project, a new topic, but and the way we've been able to access some businesses from time to time when there's an event where we want the visibility. Because a lot of that activity is meant to raise the profile, and we are thankful that profile is rising steadily, apart from the core activities, but at different places. And what's happened is, I would guess, probably in the order of 500,000 or so has been generated, say, in the last year from businesses, smaller amounts like 10,000 at a time, up to one of those other foundations, 50,000 for a very good function, which we could be servicing and expanding our base of potential financial sources from the business sector as well. So it's something that is getting a very high priority, and including obviously the international community as well.
Okay, now we are going to meet the professor, and we'll try to find enough time for you to have discussion in detail about some of the issues that we are raising, but we need more time. They are very complex and difficult issues, because this is an issue that needs society to deal with them. Because without mobilization of the society, I think we'll see much conscientized society. All these exercises will be future. We may end up with people rising against those who say, who's their friend? Who's this one? Who's up this year? So this point you follow, they put hands in there, some chairs, wheelchairs, after that you, a war. It's a very serious miracle. But I think it's something that must work it out soon. And let us meet and find some time for this. The secretary of the committee will find a date when we can invite, when we are available. Just have a long time of talking about some of the areas that are built and those that are going to be a lot of built. Then we need enough time to do so. Thank you very much for coming. Yeah. There's one area for if you tell you a problem for public hearing. Also, you can also accompany us as we go for public hearing. But I'll go for other things, not for the religious side, and those one will be part of it. But I think, thank you very much,
and your program for public hearing.
Yeah.
In terms of even the voter registration.
The registration with them,
yeah.
It might not be working out of that's why we must go there to enjoy our visit. Okay, for instance, I think the registration day 10 will be changed. Yeah, but that work on is sharing father. I want to change that one to secondary to members. Then the members must have that. Okay, for in fact, you are still going to have another meeting here. That's the new traditional leader. And the visitor thanks much more complex. But yeah. Okay, thank you very much for it.
No, it's